Welcome to the Operation Move podcast. My name is Zoe, and this week we have on Brody Sharp. He's a physiotherapist and he focuses on injury prevention for runners. And you can find him on his own podcast at the Run Smarter podcast, or you can also check in with his work at Breakthrough Running Physio as well. In this episode, we really wanted to focus on some of the common myths about running and running injuries, and also some practical tips on how to approach some of those running injuries too. I think it's a bit of a hot topic with injury, but I thought it would be great to hear a bit about your like how you got into running and how you got into helping runners.
I'd love to.
So when did you were you somebody who ran in school, or did you come into it later on?
I came into it later on. So I grew up playing basketball. That was my sport of choice all the way from just like 5 years old up until my early 20s. And my it was at my early 20s where I stopped playing basketball and actually went traveling for 6 months around North America, came back, was a bit unhealthy during my travels, like eating cheap, eating fast food, all that sort of stuff.
It's a fast way to get unhealthy.
Yes, absolutely. came back and my sister was like, hey, she decided to train for a half marathon. She's like, hey, do you want to help me or train with me? She was one to always be requiring accountability or someone just to train with, to so she can stick to her plans. And yeah, I reluctantly agreed and just loved it, caught the bug.
Yeah, I also was came into it like a little bit later. It was after kids, so it was more like 30, I suppose. And so yeah, definitely sort of like missed the boat at school. And I think it's sort of hard because it's all such short things at school, and you know, never going to make much of a sprinter by any stretch of the imagination, but running long distance is a bit different. And so did you start your training sort of like before you'd gotten into running or after?
My physio training.
Yeah.
So I was at the time when I very first started running, I was probably about 2 years into my physio career. So straight from graduating, I went into private practice and I was just treating anyone who'd walk in the door, runners alongside everyone else. But once I became a runner myself, I started having this like heightened passion for treating runners because I was going through injuries. I was going through the highs and lows and training for stuff, and yeah, I was just buzzing whenever I would see someone come into the clinic who would be a runner. I just want to talk about, you know, their running technique or what races they have or what their cadence is, what shoes they're wearing, and I would just be recognizing within myself that I just have this heightened passion for treating these runners. And took a couple of years after that, but managed to work myself into where I'm at today, where I'm only treating runners and trying to educate them as much as I can. And that's sort of where I've found myself today. And a lot of social media posts and a lot of podcasting and just trying to get a lot of information out there to runners who are very puzzled and very confused when it comes to injuries. And I'm curious to hear your experiences with running injuries and how you've found that whole experience.
It is interesting. I have scoliosis, which is relatively, like on the scoliosis spectrum, it's relatively minor. So, but it's one of those things where I probably started running in, I guess it would have been 2011, and I basically ran more or less injury free until I guess it was the end of 2017.
Okay.
With no, like, you know, and then when I went and then it was like a major injury, in the sense of that it was like, you know, like people would often ask like, oh, what did you do? And I'm like, the reality is It's not what I did, it's what I didn't do, because it was essentially a mechanics problem. So I started off with going to the physio, and he's like, oh, it just looks like a bit of nerve impingement. You know, that pain in your heel is going to ease up. Just we'll cut back on the running. But then, you know, 6 weeks later, it had not improved. And so I was like, well, I do have scoliosis. I'm going to go check in with an osteo just to see like how, like if there's something structural that I need to sort of like be concerning myself with. So I went and saw her, and she's like, oh, we got a lot of work to do. Yeah.
Okay.
And she referred me to an exercise physiologist after we'd done it, like a bit of work on where my body was at. And he was like, are you sure you haven't been in a car crash? I was like, yeah.
Wow.
Very sure. And he's like, okay, like this is like, you're still in pain. This is a mechanics problem. This isn't, you know, like this isn't like an injury problem. This is like, we've got to change the way that you walk before we can even get to running. And so it was a lot of it was coming from the hips. Like previously it had been like diagnosed as like, oh, there's a bit of pronation happening, but he's like, no, it's all coming from the hips. And so sort of a lot of it was strengthening up the hips, a lot of strengthening up the obliques, you know, like a lot of glutes. And it was about probably four months of rehab, a lot of sprinting in circles and that kind of stuff. And then just sort of like coming back into running. So I have generally been pretty good in terms of injuries, but since that I've just had to be more like on my game in terms of sort of like my strength training is usually pretty good because I like to do that, and I do that several times a week and all that sort of stuff. But a lot of times it's like the smaller things, you know, like with you know, calf raises and things that, you know, like might get skipped over in sort of like programs, but is really important for running, you know, and just all of those stabilizers. So yeah, and currently I have had a fairly like a sort of like a stress reaction in my mid shin, and then a few days later I broke my toe.
Oh, no. Okay.
So, and I was just like, I was doing some yoga and I just like tripped into my door frame at home. And I was like, man, this shin is going to clear up way before this toe does. And that's exactly what's happened. Like I can hop on the shin now and it's all good, but the toe's taking significantly longer to heal. So I'm just doing like, I do like 3 sessions of like deep water running a week and, you know, and do all of my strength training and just trust
and patience. Yeah,
a lot of patience. But probably in terms of like, I'd probably start with like, given the amount of people you would see, what some of the top things, I guess, that you wish runners would know that they don't seem to know?
Yeah, essentially because I do see a lot of injured runners, and a lot of runners do wait until the last moment before they do see or seek professional help. And people often say, oh, don't runners just wait until they get injured until they see you? And I say, no, that because they get injured and they still keep running. It's until their injury becomes significant enough that it stops or it impedes something that's really meaningful to them. That's when they see me. And an example would be like, let's just say someone has shin pain or let's just say knee pain, and there's a little bit of pain, they run through it anyway, and it gets a little bit worse, but they can still run. So they run through it anyway. And it's only up until the point where the knee pain is so bad that they can't run, or the knee pain is so bad that they can't play with their kids, or they can't get in and out of the car, or just something really meaningful in their day to day. That's when their motivation goes through the roof and they book in to seek treatment like the next day. And that's often the very last moment. And that's often way too late in the pathology to start working on something really proactive. And we have to take a couple of steps back. And we often, the process in order to recover is a lot longer than if you were to come in a couple of weeks or a couple of months beforehand. So in my experience, you don't need to seek professional help every single time a niggle comes up, because we do get niggles. But if it doesn't get better, if it's not teeting towards improvement week over week, and if it's still persisting beyond 2 or 3 weeks, definitely get it checked out, just because it might just be certain tweaks that we might need to make in your training. And then you're back, you know, back to performing, instead of it being a 6 month issue that takes 2 months to heal. It can turn into just a 5 day little niggle here and there. So that'll be my first one. And what might seem like it's contradictory, but a lot of people, when they are injured, they think they need to completely rest. There are the type of people that have a type of injury that they're like, oh, I just need to rest and the body will heal and I'll be fine. But often when it comes to an overuse injury, like a plantar fasciitis or a tendinopathy, like an inflamed or a sore tendon or overused tendon, sometimes complete rest is unhelpful and can actually weaken a lot of the structures around that particular injury. And that's where we need professional guidance around strength training or just modifying their running. And just the right education, the right guidance, because often if there's too much time spent off running, it's really hard to work their way back up and regain their fitness. And so, complete rest sometimes isn't the best option for most running related injuries. Stress fractures, I'll say, is the exception to the rule. Yeah. Stress fractures are usually the exception.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely my experience with probably when I started running, I did have some of that sort of classic shin splint type of situation. And rest was almost like the worst thing for it.
Yeah.
You know, like it's sort of like, it's like doing the things to sort of like strengthen it. Worked far better than, you know, like just staying off it, because it's sort of like, it's that sort of like immaturity that's causing it to be injured in the first place. And it does feel sort of like counterintuitive, because you're like, oh, like a pain, just stay off it. But it, you know, you'll have less pain, but it also doesn't really sort of fix the problem either. And so then you start up again, and then you're just in exactly the same situation that you were before.
Yeah. And we need to recognize the importance of mental health when it comes to rehab as well and recovering from an injury. And a lot of runners who love running spend like, you know, 5-6 days a week running. When they are injured and they want to take, well, they have to take time off. Let's just say they want to take 7 days off to recover. Mentally, they're really struggling because they want to be running every single day, but they are on the couch and they hate it. They absolutely hate it. When in fact, if we be proactive with their rehab, and we might just be doing some walk jog programs along with some strengthening exercises, squats, lunges, they're at least staying active and at least doing something from maintaining their fitness. And this can really help their mental game. And that really helps enhance recovery in the long run.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, like certainly with, I think that so much of the time you spend so much time sort of like developing those habits of, you know, like training and everything like that. And what's worked best for me is like, you know, I'm like, rehab is my training now, you know. Yeah. Like it's just like, and then when you get back to it, it's not like that huge having to relearn that thing of like, yes, I am getting out of bed. I am going, I am like setting my alarm. I'm doing all of my stuff. And yeah, like it makes a big difference. And even with that, it's still like a big, like I think it's still mentally is hard, you know, because it's sort of like where running sort of like brings people together, rehab is often something that you do on your own. So, you know, like no one cares on Strava if you've done your rehab exercises.
Yes.
You know, and, you know, instead of sort of like meeting for people for a run after the gym or wherever, or, I mean, and I guess it's different now too, like this year with all of the COVID stuff. I mean, no one's meeting too many people anyway. So like it's a big sort of, you know, like with parkrun not being on and all of that sort of stuff, I think it's probably been a big change for everyone, particularly anyone in Melbourne over the last, you know, 7 months or so. And so, yeah, I think the main things that we also wanted to talk about was, looking at some of the main, injury things that people have. So, talking a bit about things like people getting knee pain, people getting plantar fasciitis pain. Obviously everyone is individual and everyone's going to have their own sort of stuff, but what are some of the common things that would help people out with that?
Yeah. If we want to start with knee pain, I can start with that. So this is a nice one because there are a couple of misconceptions around knee pain, which is like that. This is my wheelhouse. I love trying to just provide a lot of clarity for runners. And if there are unhelpful misconceptions out there, I do like educating those runners. And the most common knee pain when it comes to runners is what we call patellofemoral pain. And that is just pain around the kneecap. And there might be other diagnoses that might be around the knee, but most commonly, especially in female runners, there is this patellofemoral pain. And it's kind of, you can locate it to the kneecap, but it's very hard to localize. You can't pinpoint it with one finger. They kind of tend to describe it as a vague area, like one border of the kneecap, that kind of thing. When I first graduated, they would say things like, okay, so the kneecap is a floating bit of bone, which is influenced by muscle tightness or muscle weakness, because all of these different muscles and fascia and structures attach onto different parts of the knee. And if something's too tight, if something's too weak, then it might drift the kneecap out of alignment or like out of its groove. And if you combine that with running, it will then become irritated because it's no longer sitting nicely in its groove. We now know that's less likely. And what this kneecap pain might be more due to is just mechanical overload. So doing too much too soon, running too fast too soon, or an acute change in your training. And so an acute change might be you've kept the same mileage, you've kept the same speed, but all of a sudden you have done hills, you've changed the terrain, so you're going uphill, downhill instead of flats, or you have dramatically changed your shoe structure, shoe type. That can change the loads on the knee, and it's essentially just like a spike in load. That's what would most often initiate this pain and start this pain. And so that's very clear for a lot of runners to go to. Secondly, the second misconception is if they're believed that this is influenced by tight structures, the ITB is often thrown out there. So a really tight ITB but a weak quad is often what's communicated to runners. There is a lot of research currently out now to show that the ITB isn't tight. We can't release the ITB. It's not pulling the kneecap across, which is a term that a lot of people like to try and picture, because if you release your ITB, then that releases the kneecap and then it aligns everything nice and magically. It's nice to think about that if that were the case, but it just isn't. The ITB itself is a very thick fibrous band on the outside of the knee that helps support the knee and the hip. It has no contractile properties. It's not like a muscle that contracts and relaxes. It just acts as like a rigid structure, and it's too thick and fibrous to have any stretch capabilities. So foam rolling, unfortunately, foam rolling won't release it. Stretching won't.
That's probably good news for people that foam rolling the ITB because it hurts.
Yeah. And so that's kind of the misconception when it comes to the ITB. But then on the other side, when we're looking at the weak quad, the quadricep muscle that attaches onto the kneecap, which we once believed was helping the alignment and helping where the kneecap is placed, then strengthening the quad will help bring it back into alignment. And that helped. That helped a lot of people. But we now know that it's not necessarily aligning the kneecap. What we're doing is we're just strengthening the knee itself just to help tolerate more loads, because a lot of health professionals will say, okay, we need to strengthen your quad, so we need to do like lunges or squats or any sort of strengthening exercises. And the aim of doing it doesn't necessarily realign the kneecap, but just increases your ability to tolerate more load because you're strengthening that joint, which takes us back to the very first reason of why you did get that knee pain, which is a spike in load. We're now building up your foundation. We're building up that ability to tolerate higher levels of load, and that's why you end up getting better. So it is very clear, and it provides a lot of clarity to runners, because all we need to do is identify any spikes in training. We need to have a really well-designed running program, make sure that we're enhancing our recovery. And then if we do have these niggles or this kneecap pain that starts arising, then strengthening can be the case. And sometimes some massage, sometimes some dry needling, sometimes these things, even foam rolling through the quads can help reduce pain, but it only helps reduce pain in the short term and isn't doing, and we need to convince ourselves or help identify that we're not realigning the kneecap. We need to make sure that all that terminology and all that, I guess the way the communication that's delivered to the runners is accurate.
And I guess so, like, because a lot of people, when you say that you run, they're like, oh, like, what about your knees? Which is a classic criticism of running. But really then it's just more about being strong enough within the quad and I guess other supporting muscles as well, mm-hmm. to be able to handle the running rather than the running causing like a degradation in your like joint health.
Tons of research now to show that running is actually good for your knees. As long as you don't do these huge spikes in training, and as long as you allow the body time to adapt and get stronger, the prevalence of osteoarthritis in runners is a lot lower than the prevalence of osteoarthritis in the general population, 3 times less. So you're 3 times more likely to get knee osteoarthritis if you're sedentary compared to if you're a recreational runner. And we now know that ground reaction force, so like every time you step, actually stimulates cartilage growth and stimulates bone growth and makes your muscles stronger, which support the joints around the knee, which is why we see less occurrences of knee osteoarthritis in runners. And it's as long as you are sensible, as long as you don't have these huge spikes in training and you focus on the body adapting and getting stronger, running's actually better for your knees than not running.
It just ends up supporting what a lot of people feel like is that always, like, body always feels better through movement than non-movement. And so you can kind of like get into these things of like, oh, you know, like force on the knee. But ultimately, like, if your alternative is being completely stationary, that's probably not going to do you any favors either. And what about plantar fasciitis? That's something that a lot of people have and can be also really, really persistent. You know, like, you can often get these sort of niggles that don't take much to encourage them to, you know, get lost with a bit of intervention. But PF is one of those things that once people have it, they seem to be stuck with it for like a really, really long time.
Totally agree. And that's one of the reasons is because it's so mismanaged, like in the early days, and a lot of people are not too sure what to do. And yeah, it's so stubborn. It is so, so stubborn. I mainly do online physio now. Well, I only do online physio now. And I see so many people with plantar fasciitis, and it is sometimes 3 years. I've had people with 5 years of plantar fasciitis, and it's so debilitating. Mm-hmm. And there are a couple of things. One thing that I want to clarify with runners, I use that word a lot, but one thing I want to get across to runners is that plantar fasciitis is can sometimes be managed with still staying active and still staying engaged, and even sometimes still running if it's low levels of irritability. But there's a trap that a lot of people have with plantar fasciitis, and it can often creep up on you, this type of condition. Sometimes it's over the period of like a couple of weeks. Sometimes you might just wake up and there's a little bit of tightness underneath the foot and you're like, oh, I might pay attention to that. And as the week goes on, that tightness is still there. And then the second week, that tightness turns into a little bit of irritation the next morning with your first steps the morning when you wake up. And all of a sudden you've got plantar fasciitis and you've had it for 3 weeks and you had no idea why. It's just crept up on you. But people go through what I call this pain, rest, weakness, downward spiral that happens a lot in plantar fasciitis. It happens sometimes with other injuries, but plantar fasciitis is where I see it most commonly. And what happens is usually there's a spike in training, or someone hasn't recovered, or they've done a lot of standing. Maybe they've changed jobs where they are now standing for long periods of time, or they've changed footwear so there's less support, and the plantar fascia underneath the foot has exceeded its load capacity. It's starting to become sore and become stiff in your first steps in the morning. If that does happen, a lot of people get quite worried. They think it's plantar fasciitis. And like I said at the start of the interview, they rest. They completely rest and they think, I just need time to heal and I need time to just sort itself out. The body will heal and do its own thing. Perhaps I'll wear more supportive shoes. Perhaps I'll wear orthotics. Perhaps I'll tape up my foot and let it heal. And then after a week or two, they try running again. They try doing sports again, playing tennis or like walking around more, and it comes back. They're like, oh no, let me put my orthotics back in. Let me tape up the foot. Let me do my roll on the frozen water bottle. Let me do that. And hopefully it sorts itself out in 2 weeks. And then all of a sudden, after about 3 weeks, they're not better. If anything, they're tolerating less. So now just like standing on their feet for a couple of hours becomes irritable. They can only run for 1 or 2 Ks before it becomes irritable. And they're doing all the orthotics. They're wearing the orthotics all the time. They're wearing these supportive shoes all the time. And yeah, it just continues down this downward spiral. So this is why I call it the pain, rest, weakness downward spiral, because they have pain. Along this whole journey, they're continuously getting weaker and weaker and weaker as the tissue becomes more sensitive and as you start relying on more support. So the orthotics or the supportive shoes or, you know, everything that allows that support. And yeah, so you've got the pain, you've been resting and it gets weaker, and that continues this downward spiral to the point where sometimes I see people that can't walk barefoot at all because it will flare up, or those who can only walk for 20 minutes, otherwise it flares up, and those who can't run at all because that will significantly flare it up. And what we need to do when we need to be proactive in these really early days is actually start some strengthening and actually start loading up the plantar fascia in a dosage, in a load that it can tolerate. So we're not spiking up the load again. We're finding what you can tolerate and being proactive and trying to keep it as strong as we can, and then restoring it back up. And that's often what I see. Sometimes orthotics can be quite nice, especially in the early days. Like if someone's responding really well to orthotics, I like to give it to them to work for about a week or so, but I always implement some strengthening so that we're being proactive at building up the strength. And once their symptoms start settling down, we're then weaning off the orthotic and reintroducing more and more strengthening so that we don't become reliant on that orthotic or that supportive shoe. And that's more of a long-term strategy. But a lot of people think, oh, you're collapsing your feet, you know, you're overpronate, you're going to need orthotics. This is why you're getting plantar fasciitis. And it's the research shows that it doesn't matter what foot type you do have, you're not going to break down, you're not going to fall to pieces because you overpronate. You're not going to be more likely of plantar fasciitis because you overpronate. You don't need supportive shoes and orthotics just because you overpronate. The research just doesn't support that.
Yeah, it is, and I think it's also one of those things too where it's just really easy, particularly, you know, I think that especially like women do tend to have high pain thresholds, you know, have babies and, you know, periods and all sorts of things, and you add in running to that where you used to kind of tolerating a certain amount of discomfort, and it's really easy to miss that first little period where things are starting to go downhill. And I remember like the first when I had, because that was one of my first presenting things when I had my longer injury, and when I was having the conversation with the exercise physiologist, and he's like going through like a full history, and he's like, have you ever been injured? And I'm like, no. And then, but then as we're talking, he's like, well, you're listing off all of these things to do with, you know, like plantar fascia pain or like shin pain, like it's not necessarily an injury, but it's not nothing. And these are all things that you've compartmentalized as just niggles, but they're not niggles. They're all things that you should have been paying attention to a long time ago, which I think is a lot of what happens is you kind of just go, oh, you know, like that's just a running thing. And that experience was really great for me because I was like, none of those things are running things. They're all things that I have to pay attention to and work on, whether that's through, through, you know, like treatment or whether that's sort of doing, you know, like a strengthening program or whatever it is. But it's just really easy to have some like big blind spots with that kind of thing.
Yeah. And this is one of the ideas around me building my own podcast is allowing runners to train smarter and make smarter training decisions so that they can still run at their same capacity and still run whatever mileage they want without breaking down into a full-blown injury, because everyone wants injury prevention. When they join my Facebook groups, I ask this question, like, what do you want to learn more about? And it's always injury prevention because we never want to be injured. But the goal of injury prevention, like you're always going to have some niggles appear here and there. It's never, we can't get that pain or we can't get that injury risk down to zero. It's so multifactorial, the reasons why people get injured. But what we can do and where the power comes in is once something does arise, day one, day two, it's doing the right things. It's making the smart training decisions so that it becomes like a 3-day niggle instead of a 3-week or 3-month injury. Yeah. And like in the past couple of months, I've had calf tightness, I've had hamstring tightness, and I've made mental notes of that. I've made mental notes of the severity and my weekly mileage beforehand, trying to identify if there was anything in my training that led to that. Maybe I hadn't focused on recovery as much as I would. And I just make a mental note. And then on my next run, I'm like, okay, how's those calves going? They actually went okay. Perhaps I change my shoes to offload the calves a little bit. Perhaps I avoid hills in these moments where my calves are particularly tight. Perhaps I avoid speed in times where my hamstrings are particularly tight. Perhaps I sub out a run for a bike ride instead and continue going, still staying active, still doing the same amount of minutes of exercise, but just making these mental notes and maintaining, still making these smarter decisions, but, you know, just still keeping active. But like you were saying, what we want to try and avoid is kind of dismissing it or ignoring it or just pretending like it's not there and continuing to do the same error over and over until it becomes more of a worry and it is harder to get rid of. And yeah, that's where running becomes a bit more of an art rather than just like a, you know, do this and follow a step-by-step process.
Yeah, because a lot of the time it is like you just sort of like you don't want it to be a thing. So you like ignore the fact that it is a thing.
Injury and neglect.
But yeah, it is one of those things where I like now I'm kind of like what's the trend? Like if it's improving, great. But if it's not improving, then, you know, like there's something that has to happen, because ultimately it's going to get you to a place where even if you conceivably can run, you're not going to have much fun while doing it because you're constantly feeling like whatever it is that's not quite right, and it's just going to sort of steal like the enjoyment that you do have with it, and then you're sort of like missing out on like why you're out there in the first place, you know?
Absolutely correct.
So the other thing also I think that I wanted to have a chat about was like stretching. Like runners are notoriously stiff, can spot the runner, which is me and a couple of other people at my gym, like anytime you're doing like one of those sort of like straddle stretches or like the frog stretch or anything like that, because like we're the ones who cannot. Like, whereas there are other gymnasts there who could get into like a splits position, no problem. And you're like, my body does not do that. So mm-hmm. Is it something that runners should be focusing on, or does that sort of like that passive stretching, does it not really matter?
Yeah, there are some like blanket statements we can make and what the research does show when it comes to stretching, which can often be helpful or encouraging for runners. And static stretching, particularly static stretching, doesn't do anything to reduce your risk of injury. And static stretching does nothing to increase your running performance. And it tends to make sense when you think of the mechanics and you think of the anatomy. Recreational runners, sprinters might be different. Like the track and field athletes, the shorter distances might be something different. But when you're looking at endurance athletes and when you're looking at recreational runners, we're not putting our body through end of range. We're not really going to high end of range like a gymnast or a dancer would. And therefore, we want to make sure that our warm-up is adequate if you're going through a high-intensity session. But stretching doesn't really do much. And there's tons of evidence to support that stretching doesn't really do much for recreational runners. Sports, other sports, maybe something different, but I'm not too sure. And it doesn't do much for recovery. There is a little bit of evidence to show if you stretch on your non-running days, like outside of running, it can potentially help with running performance or help with like just general range of movement and perhaps biomechanics, but it's a very small amount of research out there. So I don't really like to advocate it. But what I do encourage runners to do is before a run, what you should do is try stretching for a couple of minutes, try stretching for more than a couple of minutes, and try not stretching and see what feels better for you, because everyone's different. Everyone experiences different levels of stiffness and different levels of muscle soreness. And we need to like just trial and error. I know when I first get out of bed, I first roll out of bed, I feel a little bit stiff. And I like just to do some static stretching. I do it for 5 to 10 seconds on each muscle group. So not a lot at all, but it makes me feel better once I'm out the door and I'm running compared to if I wasn't to stretch. And I try to, what we can't do is convince ourselves of what it's actually achieving. I just do it because it feels good. Same with another runner. I do it because it feels good. Same with foam rolling, same with massage balls. If it feels good for you, definitely do it. And you did mention that like runners are notoriously stiff. If they're stiff and sore, like if they're constantly, every time they stretch, they feel a lot of muscle soreness, I would probably question their overall intensity of their workouts or their just general weekly strength sessions or their weekly running sessions, and would take a guess into thinking they're probably working at too high of a mileage or too high of an intensity. And that's why their muscles are consistently sore, because we're tactile people. Like if your muscles are just sore, but recovering from a workout, as soon as you go to stretch that muscle, it feels sore. And you interpret that as it's tight, because when you stretch it, it feels sore. You think that feels tight, but really it's just the muscles being sore from a workout or being sore from, your normal running or normal workouts, like your gym workouts, that kind of thing. So it's often encouraging, because a lot of runners say, I know I'm constantly injured, but I know it's because I don't stretch enough. Well, it's not because you don't stretch enough, because there's no evidence to show that. So that's the message I like to get across to runners, because if they have that belief that they're constantly stiff and they're constantly getting injured because they don't stretch enough, what that is doing is taking focus away from what's actually causing their injuries. So once they know that it's not the stretching, that's when they can start focusing on other things like their training, their programs, their strength maybe, focusing on the right type of things and being proactive in those right type of things that might be causing their injury. And then we're back to making smarter decisions.
Yeah, I've definitely found, like, I've experimented with a few different things before. Like I don't need to warm up before like an easy run, because I always have like a nice, very leisurely first kilometer to get going. But with with workouts, I've found like doing drills way more effective in terms of like the warm up. And there's a huge difference, like even just in terms of the performance on the run. Like if I'm doing some tempo intervals or something like that, and go through like a range of drills from, you know, like A skips, B skips, high knees, you know, things like that. Some sort of like arm circles, all of that sort of stuff. And, you know, like probably a few strides, huge difference to what it would be like with just say like doing a jog warm up or, you know, or whatever it is. And even like we had occasionally at the gym, like one time we had like a mile time trial. And obviously in the scope of the gym, they're warming up a lot less than what I would for like a really hard run, because it's sort of in the scope of lift a few things, do a few other things, and we'll go out for this mile. And the difference between that mile and the one that I retested like a few weeks later with my own proper run warm up was a difference of like a minute.
Wow.
You know, so like, and maybe not for everyone, that's not going to have as big of an impact, but for me, that sort of warm up, it's not just physically getting me ready, but it's mentally getting me ready. And you're kind of like doing those shorter strides to go, okay, like this is what we're going to be doing. You sort of like feel what it feels like, you get sort of comfortable with it, and it's sort of, yeah, it's has been really interesting to play around with it. And after a while, it's like anything like a routine, it's like, well, I do these drills before I run fast, so now it's almost like a Pavlovian thing. It's like I do those drills and then I feel confident about the run that I'm about to do, because it's always been positive in the past, you know.
I'm glad you said that, because I do exactly the same. If I have a time trial or interval session or something, I definitely, well, all runners should definitely prioritize some sort of warm up, because you want, as a warm up, you want to prepare the body for what it's about to do. If it's a slow long run, you don't have to prepare it for a lot because it's not going to be pushed through a lot. But if I was to do interval training, I'd do the same. I would actually stretch a little bit through my hips because I find that's a bit better. I do my A skips, B skips, those kind of things. But someone else might benefit from just doing like a couple of minutes of a slow jog, then a faster jog, then a faster run, then a faster run, then a faster run. And that might be their preparation as well. So taking all the stretching out of it, sometimes just you're still preparing the body for what's about to do in that other example of just slowly increasing your speed. Other people might find that a lot more beneficial than actually stretching, but I'm in the same camp as you when preparing for the intervals. But yeah, that's just through trial and error, and it sounds like you've done through trial and error as well, just what you've found is best for you.
Yeah, and I've tried out like a few different, I think it always I mean, I'm a running coach, so I don't like to encourage people I coach to go see other coaches.
Yeah,
but I think it is beneficial in general. So like I'm in some ways, I do encourage them to see other coaches, because I think that you learn so much more. So like I'd probably, on average, I would usually stay with a running coach for a few years or something like that. And you just, everyone has a different approach. And so it has been useful is that you're always picking up new things. So one would have like a focus on, you know, like doing a lot of repeat workouts. Another one would be like, we're going to be doing all of this sort of stuff for the warm up, or another one would be like, do all of this strength training, you know. And you just always pick up new things to try, and you can kind of like go outside your sort of like comfort zone with things and just try new things. And like, it's like anything, it's like some of them you go, you know, I don't really notice the difference, I don't really think it's that important. And then other things you really gel with and you're like, actually this makes a big difference to me, and I'm glad that, you know, I learned it and everything like that. And you know, sort of similar with strength training is just, you know, I think with runners in general, like it's the strength training thing can be a hard sell. but from a perspective of performance, what would you say is the, what would you like to see runners doing from a strength training perspective?
Yeah. And if I keep delving on like the research and what the literature shows, there's tons of evidence that strength training is very beneficial for running performance. And it tends to be in the range of like a lower rep range, heavier type of exercises. So a lot of runners, like you said, sometimes it's really hard to convince runners to get involved in some sort of strength training. And I would definitely agree. But once they're in, once they do their strength training, or once they get into the gym, they do a lot of bodyweight exercises. They do their bodyweight calf raises, bodyweight squats, bodyweight lunges, and they work at a high rep range. So they do like three sets of 20, 15, 20, 25, sometimes 30 reps. And the evidence does support that you would, if you wanted to increase running performance, you need to start in a safe, like if your technique is safe and you've got the experience, slowly increasing your weight so that we get that rep range down to around about 8 to 12 reps. So that by the 10th rep, 11th rep, 12th rep, you're really struggling at the end of that set. Put the weights down, have a couple of minutes to recover, and then work your way through about 4 sets of those. And it can be simplistic. There's a lot of complicated exercises that are out there, but if you stick to the basics, if you stick to some sort of calf raise, if you stick to some sort of squat, some sort of lunge, any variation of those, if you're safe about it, and if you don't do too much too soon. So we don't want to go straight into the gym, not doing anything before, and then try and lift heavy weights. We obviously don't recommend that, but the evidence does support when it comes to increasing your endurance. So we're talking about like improving 10K times, half marathon times, marathon times. Doing the heavier stuff in the gym has shown to be very beneficial and is actually more superior than if you were to do bodyweight exercises.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times it is like that sort of like comfort factor. Like it can be intimidating to walk into the gym and you don't necessarily know like how to use the equipment, or you know, like there's that big sort of unknown factor, which I think is why it's so good now that like a lot of the gyms are having like more intro programs, so you start with a whole bunch of PT sessions to get you really comfortable with what you're doing, and they get to see what your technique is and all of that sort of stuff. And it's often too like such a mental shift from, you know, like I was in a Facebook group that I'm in, somebody had just started doing like a heavy lifting program, and they're like there's 2 to 3 minutes in between sets, which is so long, like should I be like walking around to keep my heart rate up? And it's like, man, like the cardio life dies hard.
Yeah.
It's like, and it is like a mental shift to go like, no, actually, like when you're resting, you're resting so that you
and keep still. You
know, keep still. And you know, like if you're bored, then it probably means like next time you could probably put like a little bit more weight on.
Yeah. Or you could do like a superset. Like you could, while you're resting from your legs, go and do an arm exercise. And then come back and do your second set of legs. You can get creative.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that, it is just a bit of a mindset shift with like going into the weights environment. But I think it's also just good to know, like I think that when I started, I recognized that I was not overly capable of like pushing myself to do weights at home. So I was like, all right, like I'll sign up to do a thing at the gym and then I'm paying for it, so I'll definitely go. And now it's a lot easier to do stuff at home, and I don't really sort of like have that same issue anymore. But it's just like the same with running, like if you're struggling on motivation, you arrange to meet someone. And so
exactly, you know,
like it's just it's just the same thing. To finish off, like where are the best places for people to find you? You know, like if they want to look at online physio or check out more on your podcast or the other stuff that you're working on, where's the best place for them to go?
Yeah, sure. The first place I'd always get people to go is just to check out the podcast. So I host the Run Smarter podcast, and I do recommend if you do go there, start with episode 1 and work your way through the first 10 episodes. So the first 10 episodes cover the top 10 principles to overcome any injury, which ticks off a lot of principles. Some of what we've covered today, like that pain, rest, weakness, downward spiral, like concepts that any runner needs to know. And have a listen to those first 10 before scrolling through the 80 odd episodes that I currently have to find what's relevant for you. That's where I direct the first point of call. And if you have a listen to the podcast and you still want some assistance, if you still want maybe some personalized tailored questions, you can either contact me on social media. I'm very active on Instagram, so the Run Smarter series is my handle. Or if you find me on Facebook, you can reach out and say hi there. If we do need to go down the track where they require online physio, I do have my website. It's breakthroughrunning.physio is the website. But like I said, the first point of call would be to go to the podcast and invest in some time to build up your own knowledge. And yeah, if you do require additional assistance, they would be kind of the next steps up the ladder.
Cool. So I will link all of that up in the notes so it's easy for people to find. And just before we go, is there anything else that we didn't touch on that you would like people to know?
I think we covered a lot today. Like, I think the strength training, the stretches, and the smart training decisions are just big ones. I think making sure people are avoiding spikes in training and people are making sensible decisions. Anything that's too acute of a shift when it comes to their training. So I think weekly mileage or speed is something that's very on the forefront of people's mind, and yeah, something that people, they recognize once they are injured, they're like, yeah, I might have overdone it. But there are some subtle acute changes that they might not realize. So changing the type of shoe too quickly, transitioning through a type of shoe too quickly, perhaps changing their running form without a gradual process. So some people go straight from a heel contact and they think 4 foot contact is a better way to go. They read that's a better way to go and they make too much of an adjustment way too quickly, and then they develop those injuries. Under recovering, so making sure that's another reason why people get injured a lot. So really appreciating their sleep, nutrition, managing stress levels, that kind of thing can be really, really important. So just recognizing those, and you're significantly going to reduce your risk of injury if you are implementing all those and making those smart training decisions along the way, which is what everyone wants. Everyone wants to reduce their risk of injury. And so yes, they're kind of like the big ones, the big things that we need to concentrate on. And every other little lesson is just taking 1-2% off that overall goal.
Yeah, for sure. And I think also, you know, like it's really good to recognize, like, everyone wants to not be injured, but a lot of times, like, I think that when I was doing my longer rehab, one of the things I had to come to was like, if I love running, then I have to commit to this. Like, you know, like, nothing's going to work unless I do the work. And it, certainly at a certain point, people say, oh, you know, you could do loads of other exercises. Is running even worth it at this point? And you have to have that sort of honest conversation of like, is this worth it? And I obviously decided that yes, it was worth it. But sort of like making that mental shift to go, you know, like, if I care about running, then I have to care about rehab and I have to care about strength training and I have to approach it with the same sort of level of like enthusiasm and like engagement with it. Cause sometimes, you know, like, cause it is repetitive, you'd be like, oh, this is so boring. And something that my mum used to always say to me, like when I was a kid, is she's always said, whenever I said I was bored, she'd say, boredom is a failure to participate. And I sort of took that with that is like, if you're bored, then you're not focusing on what your leg is doing. You're not focusing on what your muscle is doing. You're not fully engaged with this process. You're not like focusing on body awareness. You're not focusing on everything being as beneficial as it could be. And that sort of like helped me through that, that process. But it has been really good to go, yep, like, if you want this, then all of this other stuff has to happen, because otherwise it's just words and you're just saying, oh, I don't want to be injured, but, you know, like, I don't want to do any work either.
Yeah, nicely said.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for your time today.
Cool. Thanks a lot. I had a lot of fun. Alrighty.
Thank you so much to Brody for joining us, and I hope that a lot of your questions were answered about all things injuries and a lot of the things that often have like quite divergent opinions. This month I'm doing a challenge which is around writing a book in 30 days. And also doing a blog post a day in that time, so a total of 50,000 words. And I'm going to be releasing the daily writing that I do on Patreon. So you can head over there to patreon.com/opmove, which I'll also link up, if you want to get early access to all of that stuff. And I will chat to you next time.